All right, so let's kick off the last session and kind of roll into
it. Yes, the last.
This is the session this is the session that made us do this entire day.
So we're working backwards.
We're kind of working backwards. But, you know, I think everything we've done today has been building up to this session, right? So, you know, everything we've done today has been setting the scene for what we're going to talk about here.
Oh, I can't wait to see the scene.
All right, okay. So we're going to talk about polyglot persistence.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
And putting it all together.
This is it.
So the idea of polyglot persistence, I mean, the word polyglot is the ability to master multiple languages, right? And when we're talking persistence, it's the ability to master multiple persistence engines.
Master.
Multiple persistence engines. So how do you put all these persistence engines together? And how do you work with them? So, like I said, these are the modules we've been through today. So we've taken a look at all the different persistence engines. We've looked at the data landscape. We've looked at all the different kinds of databases. We've seen that some are really good at doing some things. Some are not so good at doing other things. And, you know, up until now, if I build a solution on a relational database, I make some compromises, right? I make some compromises. I gain something somewhere. I give up on something somewhere. And so be it for all the other databases to this point.
Yep. And we set the stage earlier today with the data landscape. So many different types of data, so much data.
Yeah.
What were you saying, like 90% of...
90% of all the data in the world today was created in the last 2 years. I mean, it's just nuts.
Yeah, so we have these different data stores, different types of data. And
absolutely.
Always.
So in the agenda, you know, for this last kind of module, we want to wrap it all up and tie it all together. And we're going to have a look at choices. You know, how do you choose across these six different or five different data stores. How do you choose? You know, I mean, good grief. You're sitting down to build an application. Which one do you pick? And, you know, where do you go? And then we're going to introduce this concept of polyglot persistence. And then we're going to actually show you a demo of one that we've built. And one, you know, it'll be available for you guys to download and have a look at as well.
Yep.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about some challenges and then some benefits of this. And that will kind of wrap things up, I think. All right, so choices. Choices everywhere. Choice is not a bad thing, okay? But sometimes choice can be overwhelming. And like I mentioned, you know, if you pick a relational data store, it's really, really good for some things, but then it's not so good at finding the shortest point between two nodes. And if I go in a column in a graph database, well, a graph database is really good about finding shortest point between two nodes, but it's not really good in finding JSON documents by any attribute. And while our document database is brilliant at doing that, it's not so good at ingesting hundreds of thousands of records in this infinitely growing column. You know, so how do I choose? I mean, not one of these things.
Oh, come on.
Which one's my golden hammer?
You already said it, graph.
No, I'd go with document.
Oh,
put everything into a document database.
You're only going with document because you're on the team. You loved my graph.
I do. I like circles and lines, but
circles and lines.
Document databases are awesome. You get curly braces and semicolons. I mean, or commas. I mean, that's even better than circles and lines. Come on.
Okay, ASCII art.
Exactly. You might win on ASCII art, but I mean, you know, ready, set, choose. How do you choose one? I mean, and I think we've just shown you that maybe it's not so easy to do. You might have a preference because all you've known up until now is a hammer. And therefore, you're going to pick the nail, right? You know, if you like circles and lines and you're familiar with that's what you're going to pick. You're going to gravitate towards what you know. But maybe that's not what you should be doing. Maybe you should be looking potentially at your business application and seeing the kind of data that that application uses and then make a decision on your graph or on your data.
Is it really that difficult?
You're still thinking circles and lines.
I don't know.
No, you got to pick one. Come on. We can't keep going in this round. You've got to pick one.
Picking the graphical docu-column.
The graphical docu-column.
That's my choice.
The graphical docu-column. Oh, man. That's key. So why is it so difficult to pick one? I mean, we've just kind of argued round and round and round. And, you know, why, you know. So here are some reasons why it's difficult to pick one. Another reason that's not on this list, and that's the one I was referring to or hinting at, is that you'll also pick one that you're familiar with. You'll pick one that you've used before. You'll pick one that your colleagues use that is familiar to the enterprise. You'll pick one, you know, and some other types. If you want to enforce schema, then you'll have to pick a particular type. If you want to do reporting, well, then you're naturally swayed towards a particular area. But what happens if I want to do schema enforcement and reporting and scale out and rapid lookup and time series and durability all in one application? Well, now I can't pick one anymore.
Well, you can.
Well, I can, but then I'm square peg round holing most of the time.
Oh, fine. You can't.
Okay. You know, so there's all these compromises, and I don't really want to compromise on anything. Some parts of my application, I want a particular type of thing, and I'm not prepared to compromise in that part for that. But other parts of the data, I'm prepared to compromise on that a little bit, but then there's other aspects that I'm not prepared to compromise on. So I'm stuck, David. I still can't pick one.
Yep, and this, you know, the list we have on the screen, this is certainly not exhaustive, but think about it. I mean, you have to make those decisions on whether referential integrity is important, whether you have this, you mentioned skill sets, right? If you're familiar or not with something.
And if you could draw ASCII art, then go for a graph database.
Now, from an enterprise standpoint, look at the one about HA and DR. High availability and disaster recovery.
A lot of people forget about this one. Well,
there's a plan in place typically in an enterprise. How are you going to keep your operations up and running? And if something goes wrong, how are you going to recover? Those are well documented.
Couple of thousand page documents.
Yeah, well executed plans. And if now you have different choices, different databases, how are you going to choose?
And don't discount the third party tools and ecosystem too. I mean, you know, I might not like writing all my queries in an SSH shell. I might want a graphical editor. You know, where I can point and click and do some stuff. So,
and I might want easy reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. I might just want to point Excel at something and get some charts. You know, notice I didn't use the word graph there. I used charts.
Learning. Yeah,
I'm learning. All right. So, you know, I think what you can get from this is that it's very, very difficult to pick one type to rule them all. You know, this is not one database to rule them all and in the darkness bind them.
You know, Cassandra has a ring. Just saying.
I suppose I brought that one up. I started the reference. But there is no one database to rule them all, and that's what we're trying to kind of get across. So instead of having to compromise, why not combine?
Ooh.
Okay. So now if I've got parts of my application that are suited to graph and parts of my application that are suited to documents and parts of my application that are suited to column store, can I use all of them in my application?
I'd say, why not?
Absolutely. You know? And this is kind of, you know, a canonical example that we use for this quite a lot, because I've personally built a few shopping sites myself, and, you know, I've been through this. So if we take a look at an e-commerce platform, if I break it up into some generalized buckets, right, you have a cart where you can add things into your cart, and those are typically you know, fairly simple stuff that gets put in the cart and it lives for a session. But once you go away and you come back, typically the cart's gone, right? Or once you buy something, we empty out the cart. So they're fairly short-lived things. Orders, you know, here is where you actually place an order and you affect the back-end systems and you take inventory out of your inventory and, you know, you kick off logistics processes and some fairly complicated stuff in there. And then we've got the catalog and everybody has a review of the product, okay? And depending on what kind of e-commerce platform you're building, if you're only selling, you know, CDs, then it's fairly easy, you know? If you're a CD shop online.net or whatever, and you're selling CDs, cool. Okay, but what happens if you're mybuyanything.com and you're selling anything from CDs to Ferraris?
You like the Ferrari?
I like my Ferrari.
Do you buy those online?
I generally don't buy them online because I like to pick the exact grain of leather that I pick.
Mine. Oh boy!
If you buy anything on a web platform, right, catalogs and products. And then you've got suggestions. So as you're shopping through something, any half-good kind of web application will say, hey, because you bought this, or you looked at this, or your friends bought this, maybe you should look at that, or this, or that.
Right, and maybe you bought it, maybe you reviewed it, maybe your friend reviewed it,
or whatever. Sure. But the idea is that there is some kind of upsell, right? Mm-hmm. And we're always told upsell.
Yep.
So there's something in that e-commerce site that's kind of upselling for you. And that's generally how I can break up an e-commerce site. Sure, there's a whole bunch of other things around payment gateways and authentication providers, but park those for now. So if you can take that shopping site and you can imagine that, as we've been speaking through this, hopefully by now, as I went through each one of those boxes, a light bulb went off in your head and a particular store that we've been talking about all day resonated with you straight away, okay? If not, then you and I haven't done our job very well. But hopefully people have gone, that box, I know, I could use a whatever store, okay?
Right, so the shopping cart, what can we, do the shopping cart?
So shopping cart typically, like I said, it's usually based on some kind of a key, which is the user, either the username or the user session ID, mm-hmm. or some kind of thing that identifies that session, right? And you only ever look up the item by the user or by the session. So it's a good candidate for key values. You're not putting big complex objects in there. You may be putting the ID of the product, when it was added, the quantity that was added.
And we probably don't need to search necessarily inside the actual
session. No, because I'm never really going to look for, hey, show me who's got a shopping cart with a mouse, that particular mouse in it.
Right.
It's never going to happen. I'm just going to say, give me the cart for David.
As an opaque object, yeah. Say, here's my session data, here's my shopping cart. Yeah. And
give me David's shopping cart.
Yep.
And that's all I'm going to really do. Or David's added a new item, go put this into David's shopping cart.
Yep.
And that's all I'm really doing with shopping cart, right? And if we take a look at something like orders are fairly complex things, because once you kick off that order, a whole lot of things happen in the background. You're taking stock out of the warehouse, you're potentially placing an order with a supplier, you're creating invoices, you're creating orders with order lines.
Kicking off automation.
You're doing a whole lot of things, okay? And there's a fairly complex relationship that's going on in there. And because orders are your bread and butter, mostly to an e-commerce site, you want to make sure that that's durable, you want to make sure ACID transactions, you want to make sure that your data is consistent, all of that kind of stuff you want to make sure of. So orders and order fulfillment, to put that in a relational database, makes perfect sense to me.
Yep.
Okay. Product catalog, to me, perfect sense to put in a document database.
Right. Okay. Every product might be different.
Every product may be different.
You mentioned a mouse, which has DPI and how many buttons.
Exactly.
Then there's a book that has how many pages and an ISBN. And
or I'm selling an energy drink that has number of milliliters. And the amount of protein per 100 mils in the drink.
Right.
There's no way you can model products effectively and efficiently. Well, there is, but this is the best way to do it.
Yep.
And what's really nice about this is if I get, let's say you're supplying me my mice. So all the mice I'm selling on my store, you supply them to me. Next month you decide, you're changing the schema for what your mouse looks like. And you send me the new product feed and suddenly I get it. And now it no longer matches my schema. Oh, the whole database breaks and my ETL job dies. I don't have that anymore. Now I just take the JSON you give me, put it into my database, and my application kind of can still search on it.
Right.
All right. So perfect case for a document database. And then if we want to take a look at suggestions, there is no other place to do suggestions or a recommendation engine than a graph database.
Yeah, in our particular case, I think it fits really well.
Absolutely. Right?
The way we went over today, how you traverse the nodes and say, okay, I bought this item, now who else bought this item and also bought some other item and rated it.
Four
stars are great.
Or a friend of mine on Facebook, they bought this product and they're my friend and we share a common interest. We both play paintball and you've bought a new paintball gun. So maybe I should now go and buy a more expensive paintball gun because otherwise you're going to blow me to smithereens.
Which, that's fine.
It's probably going to happen anyway.
Maybe you shouldn't buy a new gun.
Maybe I should buy lots more
protective gear.
Body protective gear. There you go. All right. So that's the kind of idea. There is no other place, in my opinion, to do graphing or to do suggestions and recommendations in a graph engine. So this is potentially what an e-commerce platform can look like. And now we're not saying for one second that every single e-commerce application you build should include every one of these databases, right? We're just saying, for very large scale, very kind of to be, point specific for the kinds of things you want to do, this is a potential architecture that you can look at.
Right. It could be a different subset with your own system. Maybe you require a column store to collect data from connected devices, and then you're using a graph database maybe for an exercise site that's showing people you could work out with based on the type
they
of exercise.
They have similar heart rates to you when
they're doing similar workouts, and everybody can join in on the bike ride or the jog together.
Yeah, so I mean, it can be, my application could just be a document database, or it could be a document database and a graph, or it could be a graph and a column, or it can be all four of them, or it can be whatever.
Or five.
Right? So it's mix and match as you need, right? So a little bit of each as your application demands.
Yep.
So it just so happens that we've built a demo shopping site that I want to walk you through quickly and show you what we put together. So let's go and take a look at that. And let me show you the site quickly. It'll look like any e-commerce site. So if you have a look at that, there's a site, right? And up here, I can search for products. Now, typically what I would do in this environment is, remember we mentioned those ancillary services right up front in the beginning of the day, right? I would hook this up to Azure Search, okay? Because none of the databases that I'm using, I'm using Azure Document DB for product cataloging. But if I was looking for something that said I wanted 72-ounce pitcher, okay, that's a word inside of the description. Document DB is not good at doing full text search like that, right? And neither are any of my other stores. The one that we have on Azure that is brilliant at doing that is Azure Search. So right here, I would hook Azure Search up, and as I would type in 72-ounce pitcher, I'd fire off a request to Azure Search. Search would come back to say, here's the product IDs that match that. And then I would go to DocDB and I'd load up the product IDs that came back from Search.
Right, and because Azure Search is database agnostic.
Yeah.
You feed it from your document database
or from anything you like.
Wherever your system of record is.
Yeah, whatever your system of record is. And then here you can see my viewed items. So that it keeps, my site keeps track of what I've viewed in the past, right? And you can see that. Okay, and that's coming from a key value store, okay, that says, what have you viewed every time I view a product? It just kind of puts a record in there, and that's just always keyed on me, and it's always just a single value. It's a product ID that I've looked at, okay? So great kind of use for a key value store. Down here, you'll see kind of, this is my product catalog. So my products are broken up into tags, and then I go and look for products by a tag. And in this case, I've got appliances, and there's my kind of products, right? And this is coming out of my product catalog. And it's just a very, very simple. I'll show you when I get into a little bit more detail of how we've put this together. It's very, very simple. What I can do is, it's all REST-based, so I can just go and say, give me the details for product one, and there's product one, okay? And product one comes back, and you can see, here's my recommendation engine that's kicking in, saying, because I'm looking at this sword, I should probably look at this t-shirt as well, okay? So somewhere in Neo, because we're using Neo4j as the graph database. Somewhere in Neo, it's found a relationship between this sword and that shirt, okay?
And then you have some reviews down there.
Oh, yeah, so I've got some reviews down here, and these are actually, I'll show you the actual documents while we're here. Let me go and show you what that looks like in Document DB, right? So let's just go log into Azure Portal. While that comes up, shouldn't take too long.
I think the key thing here is seeing how we've taken advantage of the different databases, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've used a whole lot of different databases here as a good way to kind of show you what we've done. So if I go and have a look, I think this is my shopping site. That's the database that this is linked up to. And if I come down to Document Explorer, there you can see my documents, okay? And immediately you can see a difference. So there I've got 20 different products, and the product I'm looking at was one, which was my Windows Azure Sword, okay? And here I can see what the JSON looks like for that sword, okay? There's the product description. You can see this one's got some tags. It's got two tags, and then it doesn't have some of this info, okay? And if I go and look at some of the other products, you'll see their JSON looks different, okay? Now, if I scroll down to here, this is a review document, okay? So if you have a look, that's a product review. So you can see there's a review, it's linked to that product, it came from me, it had a rating, okay? And that's what you're seeing if you jump back to the screen, there's your two reviews on that kind of product. So you've rated it and I've rated it, and that came out of Document DB. So the product, so all of this stuff up here, so all of that stuff came out of Document DB. The image came out of Blob Storage because we store the URL. So if you go back to the portal and load up a document, all I'm storing here is a thumbnail to the JPEG that's in Blob Storage.
And you can actually pull that right up in a browser if you want.
So I can pull that right up on a browser, which is exactly what my browser is doing. There it's pulled up the image, okay? So that's exactly what's happening there. It's putting up the image. All that stuff is coming out of DocDB and Blob Storage. This is coming out of DocDB. This is coming out of our recommendation engine, which is Neo4j. This is, and that's about it. And if I add this to a cart, I then kind of go into that session management, and you'll see my session will kind of click up. And if I click on my session or on my cart, I'll get the list of my cart. So that's a general walkthrough of this application. Okay. Yep. Pretty simple functionality that you would expect to have in an e-commerce app like this.
Yeah, and you know, it's when you see it all connected in an application like this.
You wouldn't know, right?
Well, I mean, I think you made it look really easy that you have four different disparate database engines. They all come together in a single app. And here we are telling you, Polyglot Persistence, pick multiple and what do you have, a key store and document store, relational database and a graph database. And so Ryan and I are sitting here saying, oh, just use four databases. And we already went over some things like, you know, what skill sets did you have? Did I know about document databases? Certainly Ryan knew about DocumentDB. I knew about Neo4j, and we put our own skills together, picked these databases. But I don't think it was necessarily that easy, right? It's not always
easy. And when you have a look at the applications, if you have a look at the application here in Visual Studio, you can see that here I've got my web project, right? The web project connects to a bunch of APIs. So there's an API, an API, an API, and an API. Mm-hmm. And these here are the different kind of buckets that I was talking about. So what I've done is like a service oriented approach where I've written a service for every one of the stores, right? And then this web app over here talks to each of those services, getting the data it needs for each of those services. And you can see in here, you know, it's nothing fancy. There's a data layer, and here's my repository for DocDB, and this is what's kind of getting, this is what's getting my get product details, get product. So this is all the stuff related to a product, and there's a controller in here that kind of answers the web request that comes in. So there's the get for on a product ID, right? Now what I can do, because it's just REST, I can actually even come up to something like Fiddler, and I can come along to, I'm running my service on localhost, so this is not deployed to the cloud or anything, I'm just running it locally. But I can say, hey, there's the product, API product ID2, and I want to execute that get. And there is the result that came back, okay? So there's the result that kind of came back from that. And mm-hmm. you can see over here, there's those kind of internal system properties. There's the JSON that you saw in the portal. It all looks, there's the JSON. So this is just a normal HTTP get, and the stuff is done.
Yep. Okay. And I think it helped a lot that you broke it up into services, because at least that abstracts it from the main application.
Yeah. And the nice thing about this as well is you'll actually see on some of them what I've done in a data layer. Let me just pick this one, because I know this one I've done. So what I've done actually over here is have a look at this one. I've actually modularized it even more. Okay, so this one, the session, user session, while I was busy developing this, I didn't want to have access to Azure Tables. So I actually built an in-memory repository, okay, and an Azure Table repository, which both implement this interface. And now when that module starts up, I inject in one of those repositories to start up. Right, so it becomes very easy for me to do an in-memory test by just injecting this one in while I'm doing testing. And when I deploy to live sites, I change my config and I deploy in an Azure Tables repository, which has all the logic to kind of go and create Azure Tables. Great. And you can see this one's actually putting some stuff into user session. So if we go back to Server Explorer that you showed earlier, and I go to that, just put the password in again, please.
Oh, this is in SQL.
No, this is table storage. Oh, sorry.
Which one do you want to show?
I want to show table storage. Yeah, SQL. Okay. Never mind. I was in the wrong place.
You have so many databases to choose from.
Yeah, indeed. I get lost. I don't have the storage credential set, so I'm not going to go create them now. But I could go and log in, and I could see that the user session table was there and would be populated with some data. But that's...
Which table is it?
User session.
I actually have it up on my screen right now.
If we can switch to David's machine, there you go. So there's the session. So you can see Ryan's got a session record. He's viewed product one, David's viewed product two. And if you jump to the other table, I think there's another table in there called shopping cart. There you go. Nobody's got anything in the shopping cart. Okay, so I haven't added anything to my shopping cart, but there it is. Okay. And you can see very quickly, very easily how that's happening. And if we were to jump into Neo, you'd be able to see the products with their relationships and that kind of stuff.
Great.
So that's very, very simple. The nice thing is that because we've architected it out into services, if, you know, next month the document database that you've chosen is no longer the document database you want to work with, you can then just change the implementation of that service, pick a new store, you know, whatever you want to do. And then, you know, it becomes very nice and modular and easy to kind of work on.
Fantastic.
So that's a simple little application that demonstrates the notion of polyglot persistence and how one application can use multiple databases in the background.
Excellent. Really like how that came together.
Yeah.
And we've been showing variants of that for a while now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been working on this one. It's not our first rodeo, should we say. And there have been some challenges. I mean, I won't say that it's a smooth sailing. You know, it's certainly a lot more complicated than just building an app that uses one kind of database. You know,
yes, I mean, skill sets, right?
So skill sets. I mean, I tried to pick up some Neo for J work from you last night, and I looked at this and went, ASCII art is not my friend. There's no way that I can even figure out what's going on. So there is definitely multiple skill sets. You know, I could easily pick up the relational stuff, the document stuff, got to the graph stuff. I was like, oh, there's no way.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important consideration. But also, I think that...
I wouldn't be scared away from it, though. I mean, you know, a lot of these things are fairly easy to pick up and learn, and, you know, you kind of... It's a new technology, so you just pick it up and kind of learn it as you need to.
Yep. I think the bigger one for the enterprise, aside from
operational
the skill set,
issues.
Yeah, operational, because now you just introduced four databases. That's four sets of backup procedures and HADR for the app.
What happens if this crashes? How do you restore back to a point and all the four databases are in sync with each other and consistent with each other?
Yep.
That's an interesting issue.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely additional support going on. You know, now you can't just employ a DBA who understands how to look after SQL Server. You need to employ someone who understands how to look after all of these other kinds of things.
And there's also a system of record. I think that's a big deal, right? You have your
we always fight about it. You want the graph database to be the system of record. I want the document database to be the system of record.
Document database for our case is probably the system of record
for products.
For the products,
and
right?
Reviews. Yeah.
For recommendations, it's going to be Neo. For the purchase history, it's going to be the SQL database. Mm-hmm. Each one of them has to be identified as that system of record. And then, like the graph database,
sticking to it, yeah.
If you take a look at what's in the graph database, it's just product IDs. Yeah. We don't have all the descriptions and
because it can become really, really easy, you know, as you're working on this thing to kind of let that line blur, and then over time you start finding that you've started putting some. You know, more and more data into your graph database that shouldn't actually be there. It should be in your system of record, which is your document database. Right.
So there's one more item. I don't think we have it on the slide, but rules of your employer, your enterprise, your business.
Oh, yeah, compliance.
Somebody might say you must use this particular database engine.
Yeah.
So, well, what happens
you
if you
can't
want
to use that particular?
Yeah, you want to introduce, I don't know, a document database where it's purely a SQL shop, a relational shop. Yeah. Well, that's a challenge because you're going to have to change.
You've got to then embark on organizational change and stuff.
Right, right.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, there definitely are some challenges. But, you know, I do believe that the benefits are worth exploring those challenges. You know, I don't believe any of those challenges are anything that we can't overcome. There really are some absolute benefits. You know, we really are trying, you know, the effort and cost to avoid inserting a square peg into a round hole, you know, I do believe satisfies and addresses those challenges.
Right. For even though we have four databases, think about how simple we made the recommendation engine. Think about how simple it is.
If I show you the code for the recommendation engine, it's five lines of code that says get me these items.
Yeah.
If I try to write that in SQL, it gets messy and it gets ugly and it's time and it's costly debugging. It's no good. Whereas when we use the right tool for the right job, it's just dead simple. You know.
Yep. And I think that's what it comes down to with the benefits. We use each database for its strengths, and each bit of work we do per database is reducing complexity.
And you know, you break it up into modules like we have. You know, you draw those boundaries, you draw those lines, you stick to those boundaries, you stick to those lines. Your system might look a little bit more complicated because now it's like six projects instead of one project. But, you know, they're well-defined kind of isolated pieces that they get tied together loosely through a services framework. So yeah, each database for their strength, reduce the scope and complexity with a database type, yep. Absolutely. And that's what we've discussed, right? So in summary, choices. I love choices. I love it.
Well, hopefully we gave you enough choices.
I think we've given you some choices. And I think I hope we've told you that it's not, you don't have to choose A or B. Sometimes it's A and B. Sometimes it's A and C. Sometimes it's A, B, and C. It's cool.
What about A, B, and D?
Oh, I'm not gonna go through all the combinations of the alphabet. Okay. So I think, you know, we didn't coin the term polyglot persistence. It's been around for a while. But, you know, I think this was an introduction from polyglot persistence on Microsoft Azure and how you can do it effectively. Showed you the demo shopping site, which we pulled together, which illustrates that this is not just kind of theory and talk. It actually works. There are some challenges that you've got to go into this with your eyes open. And understand that there are going to be some challenges, but then look at the benefits and sell those benefits over and above the challenges. And I think you'll find that the benefits outweigh the challenges.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I think that's all we have for today.
That's the end.
That's a
long... of the introduction session to polyglot persistence on Microsoft yep. Azure.
And I think it's a great point Ryan just made that it is an intro session. There are some follow-on sessions where there's going to be deep dives.
There'll be a whole deep dive session into Azure Document DB and a whole deep dive session into Azure Search and SQL DB and all those other things.
Yeah, so those are upcoming.
Yep.
And if you didn't get to watch all of the modules, they're all recorded, so you can go back and watch them.
Excellent.
So.
And I'll just say it, I said it on Twitter as well, but to all the book winners, if you email me, then I will make sure that I get that book voucher code back out to you. You get to choose which book of the two you want, and I will make sure that I get the voucher code out to you.
Or I guess send a DM on Twitter.
Or send me a DM on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So big thanks to all of you
yeah,
for
thank you very
hanging
much
with us.
For taking up a good part of your day. I hope you've had some fun. We've had some fun in studio, so I hope you've had some fun, and I hope you've learned a lot.
Anything else you hope?
I hope that the Seahawks win the Super Bowl next year.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Too soon? Maybe. maybe. It's never too soon. And please, can you guys take the poll at the end of the session? That's the only way we know whether the content was good, whether you enjoyed it, and whether we should come back and do more. Yep. Excellent.
All right, well, thanks again.
Thank you very much, and goodbye.